This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name is Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. I'm at Reykjavik Domestic Airport, where my guest has just caught a flight from where he lives, which is Akureyri in the north of the country. He's heading off to Canada as part of a very exciting tour, one of the many things we're going to talk about with my guest today. Svavarnuta, the singer-songwriter. Indie folk is a phrase that's used to describe you. Are you horrified or not by that?
It's fine. Yeah. I'm independent and I'm a folky, so that's quite as fine as a Nordic folk, Icelandic folk, whatever.
Yeah.
Folk is just the music of the people, you know, that is, and I think the only kind of clear idea that divides folk from other music is that usually it's not written exclusively for profit purposes, it's written from the heart. Purely, you know, so I think that's the huge distinction between folk and the rest of the genres.
And you've been writing and singing for a long time?
Since I was like a kid, but I've been working as a musician solely since 2008, since the financial crash, actually. I quit my job just before Iceland crashed and the world economy, and I was very lucky to keep my head above water that time, and I have managed for the last 16 years.
Did the crepa feed into your songwriting at all?
Oh no, not at all. It did strengthen my resolve, because I am my parents' son, and they are very, very stubborn, and this very non-conformist stubbornness that defines my family. So basically, oh no, it's becoming less feasible to be an artist. Well, then I better lean into it.
You double down.
Yeah, you double down.
Well, I guess with 16 years of that at a professional level under your belt, it was the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, there's been very rough patches. I mean, COVID and the aftermath of COVID has been very, very difficult. Actually, the COVID year in Iceland wasn't so bad, because the government offered like benefits that were linked to your tax forms, you know. And as I am my father's son, and my father said, you never cheat on your taxes, you know. I had all the receipts, so I
you
was
didn't need to.
I was fine for a year, you know.
Yeah.
After COVID, like 2021 until now, has been very difficult, because people are still kind of like, people over 30 are still kind of hesitant, or maybe a better way to describe it is an atrophy of the social muscles.
Okay.
You know,
I wonder if part of that is that for a couple of years, everyone just got out of the habit of going to see live music. Maybe it's not just music that's affected by that.
Yeah, I think it's social life, you know.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that we are very sensitive to these things. Anyone can become kind of socially isolated just by an accidental happenstance in their lives. Mm. So it was a very eye-opening, like, scientific thing to see.
Yeah.
That the majority of people will actually become atrophied when it comes to these things, and that it's a huge responsibility of the community to bring people back, because you know, not going out and not seeing other people and not being social can have deep impact on not just your mental health but your physical health as well.
I think folk gigs and singer-songwriter gigs can be very convivial, they can be very pleasant, and they can bring people together, quite an intimate atmosphere. Have you found that that's something that your music's been able to do?
Yeah, I think that was what drew me to the scene in the first place, this idea that the music I write and the music I perform, and then I found fellow performers and writers that do the same thing. There was not this implied need or duty, you know, to to facilitate copulation and you know, and to facilitate people's like sexual or you know adventures, but to be more a community booster and a community oriented act. And I think I love that about folk is that a concert is more like a community thing rather than, oh wow, let's all go and just adore this star there on the stage, you know, oh there's such a star, there's lights and there's, oh wow. But instead it is all about community, about coming together, about inclusion. And that's really what drew me to the genre.
So much of Iceland's storytelling tradition is obviously written, it is literary, but on the musical side, do you think that what you do fits into a sort of musical storytelling history?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a thing that I've been kind of very, very conscious about, is that there's a relationship between language and melody. Mm. And that every language contains its own melody. Even accents, even dialects of languages contain different melodies. So like Welsh English, Scottish English have different melodies rather than English English. And even not English, Yorkshire or Derby or English from Bristol. Yeah. You know,
The UK has got an astonishing number of accents for a relatively small landmass.
Yeah, and you have like California American English, and then you have something from Kentucky or Tennessee, from the Appalachians. It's completely different melodies, completely different even subject matters of the songs, and then you know, so just the subject matter and the language, or just the shape of words and sound of words can affect the melody and affect the structure of songs. And I'm fascinated with that, and that's what draws me also to folk music, because there is this kind of inbuilt feature of folk music, is that it's based on local languages and based on local knowledge and experiences and stories, you know.
The language that you write in, though, is
50-50. Yeah, Icelandic and English.
When you write in Icelandic, is there as much diversity? I was told by my language teacher that there is a difference between the Akureyri dialect and the Reykjavik dialect, but it's quite hard to tell the difference.
Well, I've traveled around Iceland a lot, like since I was a child. We moved a lot. I just recently moved to Akureyri, actually. But there is a difference in subject matter and approach between east, west, and north and south. And it's very, very subtle, but you can feel it. And there used to be a stronger dialect, for example, in the East Fjords, and it was really like ethnically cleansed by very, very extreme factions of Icelandic culture in the 19th and 20th century. It was called the Flaumalska, which when you pronounce the I like eh, like this, so you would say skir would be skær, and me would be mag, and skenkir would be skenkær. And this was considered impure, you know, and it was purified, and people were shamed for it, and which is terrible, because this is just the flavor of the East Fjords.
Yes.
And it's terrible that we just took this flavor away and shamed them for it. And even in 1700s literature, there are travel books or books of travelers that are describing the East Fjords as having the most wonderful Icelandic, you know. And that is this dialect, actually.
So to an Icelander, would that dialect now sound strange?
I think because of the brainwashing of the last 100 years, a lot of Icelanders would hear it and judge the other person to be uncouth or lower. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people. But for me, I would say like it's like reclamation of wetlands. Okay. You know, we are reclaiming biodiversity of our culture and our language. I want this.
Yeah.
I want there to be a diversity of sounds and dialects in the language.
And on that diversity of sounds as it relates to your music, let's take English and Icelandic as two examples. You talk about the way that words can be musical, that they have musical attributes. When you write in one language or the other, does it affect the melodies that you choose?
It certainly affects the melodies. I mean, the melodies spring from the words. The words are the wellspring, you know. And also the subject matter changes based on the language. And I mean, when I write in English, it is a lot of the time it is a more general or philosophical. I would love this to be universally accessible, like the story and the subject. So I'm singing it in English, and this needs to be talked about in English. But if it is a subject matter which has to do with my family, my inner family, and my deepest feelings or nature, I cannot sing in English. I couldn't. So I would write about love and breakups in English, because English is the language of, it's a lingua franca. It's a pidgin language for people talking about love. You know, and love is business. You know, yes. For the world, you know, like a love is a
makes the world go round.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So everybody needs to be able to talk about it and understand it. But when I'm speaking, and also like that is the most accessible, generally accessible thing that I want to be able to share.
Yeah,
love and relationships, of course, friendships, you know. But then when I'm writing about, I couldn't say glacial river. I could never sing glacial river or blueberry heather. I could never sing birch tree, you know, that is fundamentally polar, like it goes against every grain of my being.
But there are some concepts, I think, you know, geological concepts that just don't really make sense in English because we don't have them. The example would be Landris, where we talk about the land rising before an eruption. Now, if you bang that into a translator, it comes up with something that I think is actually very poetic, which is land giant. And I love the idea that a land giant is forming under the ground before there's an eruption.
Yeah, because because the translation software is probably assuming you missed an I.
Yes.
Because land risi would be a land giant.
Yes.
Risi is giant, but ris is rise.
Yes, yes. But it's a rare occasion where the translation software actually does something quite poetic.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was something like, there's a lot of these instances where the translation software just doesn't get it translated to something completely different.
I once read a story that someone who'd been convicted of a traffic offence had been executed rather than fined.
Yeah.
It seems a little bit extreme, but anyway. So we're going to hear some of your music at the end of our conversation. I'll ask you in a bit, maybe pick a song in English and a song in Icelandic. We can compare and contrast at the end of the conversation. But as I say, we're having a conversation today at the domestic airport in Reykjavik because you're only here for a few hours. You're off to Keflavik and then you're off to Canada.
Yep. I'm going to Folk Alliance International Conference to showcase, and then I'm doing a short tour with my friend Sean William Clark, who is also, he's a Canadian friend, but he's been in Iceland a lot, not for the last couple of years, but before COVID he was visiting Iceland quite a lot, and he was a great friend of our community, so it's great to be able to see him again. But yeah, I think for the selection of songs, I would recommend, for example, I have two songs that are called November and Januar, and they are both a little bit rocky. They are not classically folk, and they are the bookends of an album that is exploring grief. And they bookend the final chapter of the album, and they are about entering darkness and coming out of darkness.
Okay.
So November is about the coming into darkness and embracing it, embracing the dark. And Januar is about now, yes, it is good to rest, but now you have to wake up and we have to come back into light.
As the sun rises over the city as we sit here.
Yeah. And it was so funny, when I wrote Januar, it was all about this feeling of being on top of this heath, Steingrimsfjallarheiði, on the way to Ísafjörður. And on the way, Laxardalsheiði in winter in near Strandir, and all this like snow on top of mountains and like driving over these white deserts of snow, the wastes, you know. And there were so many words and descriptions that there was no way to write it in English. Mm-hmm. But November is about such a familiar theme that it's about the darkness of the autumn, you know?
Yes.
And everyone can, that's a universal thing. So it automatically became an English song. So even if these songs are part of a kind of a sibling, I write often songs in pairs.
Yes. So they're closely related.
These two are supposed to be played together.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's hear them together.
Yeah.
Curtains fall in November. Cover all that lies behind. Every day like fading air. Clouds a thousand shades of memories, and the sun is fading fast, and the sun is fading fast. Snow drifts down in November, a quiet blanket on my mind. Summer begs me to remember, tie me tighter to the mast. Light a candle in November.
The two songs there from Svavarnuta, November and Januar, and you can hear the two songs working closely together. You live in Akureyri, and whenever I'm there, I'm struck by just how much it culturally punches above its weight. A city of 20,000 people, it's got its own symphony orchestra, for example, and wonderful work taking place at the Hof. Are there lots of opportunities for you to perform?
Ah, not really. Oh. I mean, I play a lot in the Outlands, you know, I go abroad to play because the thing I'm doing, like my niche is very narrow. And I love Icelanders, but Iceland is pretty conservative in some ways. And one of the ways is that people kind of like music to be something that they are drinking and having a good time, you know.
Schlager.
Or, Yeah, I like a little bit of Schlager, and or it is posh, you know, like the symphony orchestra. But I have to say, Akureyri is extremely, punching above its weight. And not only does it have like a theater in the town of Akureyri, there's like two or three theater groups, independent theater groups in the countryside around it. And there's one in Dalvik as well, like just 30 minutes away, theater groups. And and they put up a couple of shows every year. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it is... We moved to Akureyri out of a kind of this stubbornness, this kind of a non-conformist stubbornness that I was feeling this, the people of, kind of, not around me, but in these kind of circles in Reykjavik, they constantly talk down the rural areas of Iceland. And I said, if you hate it so much, then I might just move there, you know, and well, actually, prove you wrong. Yes. I love it.
Well, you and I were actually hoping to meet in Akureyri in a couple of weeks when I'm going to be there, but you're going to be in Kópavogur that day, which is where I live. So we're having our conversation today with you en route to ultimately to Canada for this performance.
And we are here in the biggest kind of argument stone of Iceland, the airport in Reykjavik, which like the people of central Reykjavik love to hate. You know, and the people of the rest of Iceland really need.
And you will, doubtless by the time you hear this conversation, the story may have moved on, but of course there are trees being felled around the airport to ensure flight safety, not least for those emergency flights that serve the rest of the country.
Yes, and even if I am a tree-hugging hippie, you know, myself, and I'm a total environmentalist. That being said, these trees that are being felled are not native to Iceland, they are spruce. And there were never spruce trees in Iceland to begin with. Iceland is a country of birch, and these are little trees, you know. And spruce trees shouldn't be in Iceland, in my opinion. They should be birch, and smaller trees, like 5 to 8 meter high trees. Yes, these abominations, I'm fine with them going.
Okay. It's a view. I think we've covered a lot of ground in our conversation, haven't we?
Yeah, thanks a lot for you know, accommodating with me, you know.
Not at all. It's great to meet up. Enjoy Canada. It sounds like you're going to, and meet a lot of wonderful people and get your music out there, which is obviously what you enjoy doing. We'll put a link up to your various websites on the page accompanying this show from Roof English Radio. Very quick look ahead to the rest of 2025. Plans for when you're back in Iceland?
I'll be here in the summer playing around a little bit and, you know, trying to reclaim a little bit of my life mojo in Iceland. Moving to Akureyri was a big step and I'm acclimating to that. But, you know, you need to get back on the horse with touring in Iceland as well, even though it can be a bit rough, you know.
Svavar, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Svavar Nutter, my guest today on Roof English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch with us anytime. English@ruv.is.
There is more from Roof English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.